You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
You have some Miami pants on today, Dominique.
Miami ass shorts.
Yeah, you got some Miami ass shorts on.
You're like, you're packing for this trip? You're like, yep, these are coming.
I didn't pack for this trip. We did a ridiculous spring break where we started. Well, it was honestly me lashing out, but it backfired.
Nice.
So I asked my wife, could we do like some international travel now that COVID was calming down? And she was like, sure. She doesn't really like international travel. She's not much of a traveler. So I keep asking. So I was like, want me to do passports? And she's like, no, I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
Nah. And then it got closer. She's like, you know, we should just wait till it gets real close. Mm-hmm. And then since we live in D.C., like, let's just go to the State Department and get it done. And I was like, all right.
Is it faster?
It's supposed to be if you walk in.
Huh.
Anyway.
Dominique Foxworth is here. We're all very happy to see him. Old friend of the show back in town to give us some expertise. What are you smiling about, Amin?
I'm smiling because Dominique's here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Dan's not going to bully me off my boring story. I want to tell a boring goddamn story. I'm telling a boring story. You don't pay my check? Fire me. All right. So, I was lashing out. I was like, you know what? We're going to Aspen. Take your ass somewhere cold for spring break.
Oh, you zagged.
Yeah. And then I got scared. It was like, all right, after we go to Aspen, we go fly from Aspen to Miami. so that she's not too mad at me. So we're at the second leg of our spring break right now.
Going to Aspen, you got to watch out for Gwyneth Paltrow, man. She's out here.
You know what I was surprised by in Aspen? I was disappointed. Because, of course, it's like it's super expensive and exclusive and whatever. And it's like, yeah. And I was excited because I was like, I'm going to see a couple brothers. And I always know that when there are fewer black people, the way you greet each other, it's more vigorous. Because you have to express to them, if shit goes down,
yes,
I got your back, motherfucker.
It's not like that with white people. When there's only like two white people, it's like we try to like, we don't need to be near each other.
Yeah, because the rest of us will be nervous. If you guys go next to each other, you start winking.
If we do like the whitest handshake ever, it's like, what's going on over there?
You know the history of DAP? From the Vietnam War, it was black GIs used it to communicate to each other that they had each other's back. So I see black people in Aspen, and I want to communicate to them, I got your back. And I slightly tilt the hand up to dap them.
Well, hold on.
And then they go for the handshake, and I'm like, I can't trust you.
Firm handshake.
I can't trust you.
But hold on, Dominic. You tell me in the 50s, everyone was just like, hello. Like, they were just handshaking, and then it got to the Vietnam War in the 60s, and I'm like, guys, we need something. Let's tilt it 45 degrees. Okay, now I know you're cool.
It feels like you're mocking me, and I'm here for the joke. So go ahead and get all the jokes out before you get to Google.
I'm asking questions.
And then you're wrong.
Put it on the poll, Juju, at Le Batard Show. Do black skiers in Utah shake hands instead of dap?
Colorado.
As if they're in Vietnam is the question.
As if they're in Vietnam, yes. As if they're in Vietnam is a good addition to that question. I'm gonna miss the polls when Twitter takes them away. I wanted to get your expertise, Dominique, on a football thing because the Dolphins have spent $7 million at running back, Mostert, Jeff Wilson, Ahmed, and they were in play for Derrick Henry and in play for Dalvin Cook. They asked about Dalvin Cook. Austin Eckler, you've seen that position ground to dust. Like, what's the right way to do that at that position?
I don't think that there is a right way. I think that there is, I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson who had this quote about saying that at the bounds of, like, intellectual enlightenment, like, is just more ignorance, essentially. And so I think as we get smarter and smarter in sports, what it does is it opens up more questions. Because, you know, like, when we thought the earth was flat, some of us still do, like, we knew less. And then we're like, oh, well, the earth round. And, oh, we revolve around the sun. And then what about the sun? What about the planets around there? And you just learn more and more. And I think as we add more intelligence to the game, the questions get bigger. So I get frustrated with some of the analytics community, because like I'm a smart guy, I can handle the numbers, but they present it as if it's fact and like as if it's not changing and as if the decisions that you're making aren't contingent on the variables, and the variables are constantly changing. And in a game like football where there's so many variables, it feels impossible to say there's one right way to do any position.
So right now, I think like loading up on running backs at a cheap value seems smart. Excuse me, because
$5 because they're gonna get hurt too. On top of everything else, or they're very likely to get hurt.
I'm not paying. Who gonna check me, boo?
That's $6 if you're not paying. If you're
if
you're refusing to pay,
just say you'll pay and don't.
Do the stupid
like, trick. I find you contempt of court.
That's it. I'm just banging the gavel and it's not working because I have no authority over this person.
That does not jive with my personality.
I got you, Dominique.
You will not cost
an employee money, a team player.
I will pay you.
Pretty sure she just took money out and put it right back in.
I mean, why would you cancel to her like that?
Tricking me.
And you want to keep it away from me?
Unbelievable.
I haven't had cash in 10 years.
I was thinking you just canceled Christmas for Jess.
She fooled me so easily. Her waving around cash should have been as if she were waving around a small fetus alien. Like, I don't know where that came from.
The baby in Twilight.
It's so interesting, though, because smart people are now, they've gotten smarter in football. They're not cavemen in analytics and those things. This is probably the smartest time in football. And you're telling me that we still don't know how to measure that position. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the Lamar Jackson position, because that's an intersection of things that's amazing. It's an amazing intersection of things when you come to guaranteed money, which your union tried to argue for, and you can't have too much of in your sport, correct? Like, it's in your sport, you can't make the contracts too guaranteed, and they're already tending in that direction.
The dirty little secret about fully guaranteed contracts is it's not as simple as it seems. And so I think I heard Amin and Jessica, two quality union people. Well, I mean, he worked for the man, in case you didn't know. But the point is he understands how unions work and say that unions are for the little people, because the big, most powerful people don't necessarily need the union and would probably thrive more without a union, because the union caps their pay and it like lifts up the floor on the worst players' pay. So, I mean, the dirty secret about fully guaranteed contracts in football where there's a hard cap is, if the player plays the whole time, it's fine. If the player gets hurt, that money is out of the cap unless the union negotiates for some sort of like allowances for like an injured player to then put that money back in the cap. So it's like it's a complicated thing
to
unfold.
But it's crazy. It is. There's not quite anything like that with the human body, is there? Where we're going to use this sport, America's most popular sport, to make sure that we can measure the value of how much your body is worth, and we're going to hurt that body. And now, like, we're guaranteed to hurt that body, and I don't want to guarantee your dollars.
It's a trade. And I like joke with my kids all the time about this, is like, you know that fancy school you're going to cost me a knee. So you better get your ass up. You better get your ass up and go to school today, because this thing aching right here. You know, this fancy ski vacation, complain one more time. This reconstructed hip right here is yelling at me too. And they don't really care one way or the other, because they've lived in this their whole life.
I'm glad that these parenting techniques are not unique, like, because I do that a lot.
They don't
work. A lot of shaming, like, you guys like this? You like going to Disneyland?
Yeah, but Dominique is doing it with his actual body. Like, he just turned 40 years old.
My back hurts too.
From sitting in a chair.
4 hours, chair.
From being in corporate, crunching numbers on how it is. Well, you did the coldest version of this. I mean, you had to measure the value of a human being you liked and his body. You had to...
Oh, you mean... Oh, yeah, no, that was easy.
In basketball, though, you had to be cold about it.
No, the stories of guys that were medical red flags. And like, you know, having a doctor walk in and say, look, if you play him, his heart might explode on the court. And you're like, all right, so we're not taking him. Like, it never occurred to me like, oh, my God, that poor guy. I was just like, yo, this is the decision we're making.
So why weren't you taking him, though? Because it wasn't because you cared about his heart.
No,
it's because you feared getting
liability. Liability.
So, Dan, you're really, when you do this stuff a lot and people ask you to host the show or host, like, you start to learn how difficult it really is to host and like how hard it is to like listen. And like, I've noticed you through the course of this direct me off of conversations that are obviously interesting to me, but boring to everyone else. But we cannot let Amin get away with pretending like he's a good person when he let these people, he's like, no, I don't care. His heart's in trouble. No, I don't want my company to get sued.
That's exactly what I'm not saying. Like, there was no part of me that was that was really empathetic towards that when it came to those things. When Amar'e Stoudemire was a free agent in 2010, we came up with this really elaborate contract where it's like your first 2 years are guaranteed, and then the third year is like 75% guaranteed if you meet like this min, or 50% guaranteed if it's you meet this minimum threshold of minutes played in the year before, and then the fourth year is another percent guaranteed, and so on and so forth. We're like, this is very fair. And then the Knicks came in and they're like, 5 years, fully guaranteed. And I'm like, all right, man, have fun in New York. Like, you have to have that. Like, you can't sit around and make emotional decisions, you know, oh, no, I can't let him go, because ultimately you're planning for bigger things. I've talked about this on the radio where as people are saying, like,
you were genuinely having trouble remembering where I talked about it.
All he does is talking to mics.
It might have been Illuminati. It might have been Metalarkers. It might have been on the radio. But
it might have been a phone call.
So you were repeating yourself and quoting yourself from a platform you're not sure of where it was. It might have been on the
several iterations over. So someone asked me, I can't remember where or when it was. Maybe it was on the street. Someone asked me, what are the Celtics going to do if Jaylen Brown decides to walk? And I said, let me tell you right now, if they're a good front office, and I believe they are, in their war room, they have a zillion permutations of, this is what happens if Jaylen Brown walks, but we trade him for such and such. This is if we trade him for a bunch of players. This is if we trade him for one star player. This is if we don't let him walk.
Not human beings, assets. Chips, yes. Chips on a board.
All there you the go, different, Dan. Host this shit, baby.
All the different permutations, right? So, like, the idea that anyone could be shocked and then, like, what do we do now? Like, that's not a luxury you have as a front office. So when, you know, Dominique says, oh, is the guy's heart going to explode? Yeah, like, I had seven other names, right? All right, then him. Because the reality is, a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times, yes, you have your order of, I'd like this guy best. But then it's like, the next best guy isn't that far off. Like, obviously, at the top end, it's like, would I rather have Durant, or if the next best guy is Terrence Ross? Surely I want Durant, but a lot of times it's not that. It's like, would I rather have this guy or that guy? I was like, eh.
You said Amin is talking into mics a lot. And earlier he said he used the shame to motivate his children. Yeah. I would like you to say, you hear this raspy voice, kids. Yeah. You like Disneyland, don't you? Well, I had to do Doc Rivers for 13 hours the other day.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
We all know the words to Last Resort.
Yeah.
You know how I know it's a hit? Roy, you absolutely know all the words.
My life into pieces.
Finish the lyric. You're lying.
No,
you're lying.
Roy, I'm not having that.
Roy going to get the first ever attack from the chickens? Are you all accusing him of lying that he does not know the song that we're talking about?
Stugatz.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Submission. No breathing. Don't give a fuck about me.
That's a guitar part.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Metalarkers is a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I love that show.
Thank you. It's
this is the most labor-friendly Thursday morning I've had since I started working at this company.
I mean, Off the Looking Glass, also phenomenal. I enjoyed the interview that just like devolved into a mystical place that was pretty fun. Which is
They're all like that.
It was. I just only listened to the last one.
You know, now you got to go around and say something about all our podcasts.
Yeah, you know, Montgomery and Company, because Miami, what's up?
Trash.
Okay, thanks.
Wow. Jesus. You got to get Renee on to
I'm just joking. I haven't listened to Montgomery & Company, but
that's worse.
That's even worse.
I haven't even given them the lessons.
No, I'm not okay.
I'm sorry. I mean, it's great.
You could have just said that.
I work hard on those shows, you know.
He's a big cinephile guy.
Oh, are we on now?
Yes, we are on.
Trapped me. Now you're going to have Renee Montgomery coming after me? I'm just joking, Renee. I love your show. It's great. I think I've heard.
This is what I wanted to talk about.
Don't you live in Montgomery County?
No, I live in D.C.
And you don't live in Maryland?
No.
Live in the city, in the town.
So my wife's whole family is from D.C.
I mean, get out.
What's
2 minutes. Just get out. You forgot you were doing the show and you just got curious. Get out. Get out and don't even say anything.
They love Montgomery County.
Two minutes penalty box. Both Chris and Roy said to you, what does that have to do with the show? Because you just you're not having a drink with Dominique. We're doing a show for a lot of people.
What school district is it, though?
I mean...
Jess, go sit with him. Jess, go sit with him.
Jesus.
We'll get back to how lovely Off the Looking Glass and the podcasts are, but I do want everyone to hear this because Dominique, I wanted him so badly, so very badly to be. I don't want to handle money. I don't want to have anything to do with the money in the business of Metal Arc Media. I hate it. And I wanted Dominique to be our COO. And he told me he would not be. And why did you tell me you would not be? Because I thought we had a real chance to hire you.
Because you are friends and family with the people that I was going to fire. That's it. It's plain and simple.
He is not being gentle about. Or he is being gentle about that. He said he wouldn't take the job because I wouldn't fire anybody.
Yeah. No, I mean, the point was, it's not that it's specific people, but it's like you're trying to run a business or you're trying to have a family. And I made this joke earlier. It's like you either die a hero or live long enough to sit in meetings. When I walked in this morning to see you guys, you're sitting in meetings. And that's what I recognize. Is like if you are inside the ESPN machine, you guys can be these rebels. And I can come in here and it can be fun and joke around, use a key card sometimes, bounce around, have a good time. But once you are separated, like you have to become the establishment a little bit. And my thought was... You know what's not going to go well for me is me trying to turn this group of rebels into some sort of organized structure without the ability to like actually have repercussions. And like, obviously, I don't want to fire anybody and you want to train people. You want things to get better. But the point was that has to exist as a possibility. And I know from you that that does not exist, at least at that point, that does not exist as a possibility because you're like you have a utopian view of some of these things. And I mean, as much as I'm a normal person, so I hate David Sampson as much as the next guy. But every now and then he says some things that are true. And sometimes parts of business are uncomfortable. And we hate to hear it from a person like him, but it's true.
Sampson, you're protesting him, right? You almost didn't come in today. And you were talking about not being a part of our show in any way, protesting because Metal Arc Media has made the error of hiring David Sampson.
It's the exact same thing that I was talking about. Is like you die a hero, you live long enough to become a villain. He represents a lot of things. Like I don't want to speak to him personally, but when I listen to the show and you kick Jessica out, but I love that Jessica's here because she is one of the few voices that will push up against the things that he says is that are fact, that are like a skewed opinion. And I have a skewed opinion too. I'm not saying that I don't, but my skewed opinion is the minority. So like when I'm on ESPN yelling about labor issues, it's in a sea of a bunch of other people who are talking about the players as assets. But when it's here, it's like David Sampson with no pushback, but he's pushing his like tilted narrative about what matters in sports and very definitively, and it's good. It's entertaining. It's good for opinion, but it just is frustrating for me to listen.
Well, but this is the thing, right? Because me and will come back in here in a second, but as we're talking about the business of sports, and I think you're brilliant on the business of sports, and I think Amin is brilliant on the business of sports, but I think you're more human than Amin. I think you have not been made cold I'm talking about in how you view sports and players as assets and who needs to be traded and stop talking about the nonsense. Let's talk about the real stuff. The business is cold and guys like Dominique break their body trying to make money and expect some of the business to, hey, care for me back. Like this hurts. And that gets weeded out as people go through the business of sports. You're shaking your head. No,
I mean, I get what you're saying, but I don't expect it. but it doesn't mean that I should, like, it's like being black. Like, I do not expect mm-hmm. that things are going to be fair, but I'm not going to sit idly by and pretend like they are. And I think the same thing is true in sports. And I recognize that if you're going to work for, I was going to say a team, but frankly, if you're going to work as an executive for any company, there's some like bit of dispassionate analysis that you have to do. And like, I respect that about David Sampson. I respect that about Amin. I think the difference between Amin and David Sampson is Amin is conscious of the decisions that he's making. And it feels like, and David's not here to defend himself. I'm sure he will. And all this people pretending to hate him is probably great for his show and great for his personality, but his ego. But I think sometimes he presents it as if we're pretending that these things don't exist. If he would just say like, yeah, I know this is bleeped up, but this is how I'm going to do it. And that's not how it's presented. It's like, this is right, that is wrong.
So yes, he does have that kind of approach, which can be off-putting. But one of the topics we were talking about in the pre-show meeting was the idea of minor leaguers, right? The minor leaguers, it's just been announced they're going to have their salaries doubled. And everyone was like, oh, that's great. And then they looked at the details and like, oh, so now they're up to like $37,000 a year instead of 19 or whatever it was before. And I was like, yep. That's why they're minor leaguers. Like, I saw nothing wrong with that.
Those are brutal salaries. What's seen as a huge victory for minor league baseball, and it is. It is a yep. huge victory for minor league baseball. The top salary in AAA being $36,000 was shocking to me.
It was like a roller coaster. It's like, whoa, that's a great headline. And then you see the next tweet, it's like, oh, but holy shit, they were not getting paid before.
And then the tweet that doesn't exist but should if I cared about Twitter is that the league wanted that. And like, that does not strengthen the union, honestly. Like, the union's power is not made stronger by adding a much bigger lower class. And then you think about it from, these are all the things that I think about when I read these stories. So like, there's a partnership between the NFL and the XFL. And we're like, oh, cool. XFL is going to have some support. So there'll be another league. You know who that's not going to be good for? Players. Because I don't know exactly the legal connection between the two of them, but like, one of the reasons why the union has any power is because the league exists as a monopoly or a monopsony, and we can't take our employment elsewhere. If there is another reasonable league out there, then they could argue against the power that we do have and say, no, there is another employer that you can go to. Depending on the relationship between them, we're not sure how that works. And then it's also like one of the things that baseball players did early.
$5.
Again, not paying. One of the things that baseball players did early in their labor issues was they created a players' league run by the players. You know what's going to be harder and harder to do? Not that players could create a competitive league, even though some players thought to do so during our last work stoppage. But when you are completely saturating the entire market, when you have spring football and summer football and you have fall football and winter football, then where is there space to create something else? So, like, I don't give a shit about the XFL. All I care about is the players and how you protect them. So the XFL, yes, it's more jobs. But are they like the type of jobs that you can make enough money that it was worth the sacrifices you made? Because the idea that you've given up focusing on academics in college, you've given up your 20s when you're building some base of a career, you're giving all this up. Like, for me, I remember I wrote a story about this in ESPN,
the
magazine.
It's crazy.
You can't bulldoze me. I wrote about this in ESPN, the magazine, a while ago about how my contract year was like the worst year of my life. And it was the best year I had on the field. But it was so stressful. It was near depression because I was just becoming an adult. I was 25 years old. And I was just realizing all the things that I had traded. When I was 14, I was the best player. And they're like, you should focus on football. Stop looking at this stuff. Focus on football. I get to college. I want to be a computer science major. They're like, nah, you have labs during practice. You can't do that. Focus on football. During the summer, I want to do internships. Nope. You're not going to be able to do that because you got to focus on football. I give up all this stuff in my early 20s. What are you going to do? I'll be a professional football player. Just make a couple $100,000. Then I realize that if this doesn't work out, I'm going to be 27 years old and I'm only qualified to like fight people for a living. and I have nothing to like as a background. It's like, this sucks. You have to ball out this year or all the decisions that you made for the first 27 years of your life were for nothing. And like,
no pressure.
Yeah. And like, I'm in I got traded on week one to the Falcons, who had just sent Michael Vick to jail. And I'm like, I'm at the bottom of the depth chart on a bad team in my contract year. And I'm sitting in an extended stay hotel like, everybody's watching this game. Like, I wish I could be in the NFL. And I'm like, I wish I wasn't.
Wow. What?
Then I balled out and I got rich, so it didn't matter.
And I was like, I knew I made the right decisions all along.
I was in Atlanta too, boy.
Dominique, what did you think today when you walked into our meeting and you saw me at the helm? Did you think we were messing with you?
That's a great question.
It would have been a great bit.
It must have looked like a visual prank to him. He must have thought it was like a surprise party to walk into what was our environment with not a meeting. And now you got 3,500 people.
And me just throwing poop against the wall.
Nah, I was filled with 200 and about 75 pounds of confidence.
Who's 275?
275 is what he's saying. You're 275.
Yeah, like I mean, geez, that is high.
Wow. That was a lot
I think of confidence.
I'm like 220, 230.
He was talking about the confidence. He wasn't talking about your weight. He was just talking. He was saying it was an outsized confidence.
It was like you're 220, obviously, but right. You were standing up there with 50 more pounds of confidence.
Also, hit dog hollow.
Don Levitard.
Walk out, look out now. Just Jack White doing Elvis and Dewey Cox.
Stugatz.
She hits it out of the park.
Harry Carey is who that is?
It's Will Ferrell doing Harry Carey.
And Elvis occasionally. And
look out now.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings app and use code Dan to get in on the action.
Chris is in charge.
Thank you.
You're a good leader.
Chris, this is what I want you to do on days when you're in charge. I need you to come in with like a collared shirt, like tucked
don't
in.
Don't try to change him. No, stop that. You're trying to corporatize my boy. Stop that.
It's the visual. It's a visual bit, man.
Well, but what do you mean a bit, though? I mean, people have been in. I don't think that Jessica was doing a bit when she said, "I like you being in charge, Chris." Three days this week, Chris has been in charge. And initially, he started a meeting by saying meeting adjourned. That's how his career started.
It's called an opening. Dan's never led a meeting before. You like to lead a meeting? Get everyone feeling good. A little laugh at the start of the meeting.
Yeah.
Dominique knows.
Break the ice.
Start with a joke. And now he's grown 50 pounds of confidence this week. I've seen him near the bacon.
Just 50?
I mean, it's interpersonal stuff is...
I didn't turn your mic on.
Yeah, and then you hit Jessica's hand and her mic in a frenzied grab of power to bang the microphone.
I subscribe to, you don't want to be too polished.
Yeah. Mm. You want to be relatable, personable.
That's why I like Chris Cody.
Zagak.
Dominique came in here today and said legitimately, syrupy, made me borderline emotional. Chris Cody, it's been a wonder to watch you become a serious person.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just Chris. It's all of them. Like, Roy and Billy, who's not here right now, like, they are growing into something. And it, like, I don't know.
Kids and shit now, aww. It's weird.
It's not even the kids part, because any idiot can have a kid. It's like the part of
that. Ain't that a truth?
It's like the part where you actually grow into a person who I can trust with a kid, or a person I can trust with more responsibility. And the things that you're talking about as far as leadership is like you put your common man words on it. But like I went to business school and we had all full classes about how you are supposed to be more personal and be more relatable. It's like walking into, and something I learned at the NBA Players Association, big mistake that I made is I thought that there was a possibility that you could sway people with being correct or data. I was wrong. And I was like, I had spent hours and days and days and days putting together a plan for how we should go forward. And I came to the meeting not realizing that more important than a good plan is people believing in the plan, and people believe in people that they like and they want to be around and they trust. And so building relationships, I think, is more important than like doing everything right. Like saying meeting adjourned at the beginning of a meeting. Who gives a shit if the meeting was good?
Damn.
And they were. And these shows have been good. You know why? I mean, they're always good. I don't want to take credit.
Yeah.
It's all these people around here. Don't even get me started on the behind the scenes people. I love every single one of you.
He's a front runner right now. Tony, I thought you wanted EP.
Bobby, I don't want that.
Dominique would want EP if David Sampson didn't work here.
Is Billy in the running? Because I kind of like Billy.
Billy was yesterday.
Hmm. Best show in history.
How did people feel about the leadership there? Chaotic, says.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the chaos. A lot of get off my planes.
But he likes chaos. Yeah. He likes
chaos.
Hasn't
gotten old yet.
You guys want me to play it now?
Co-EPs?
Get off my plane.
Yes, that's been a highlight this week. For some inexplicable reason, Chris Cody hits wrong buttons, and Harrison Ford appears from 30 years ago as an American president on an airplane.
Wow!
Threatening...
I didn't know the reference, Roy.
What? Wow.
I had no idea either.
You don't know
Indiana Jones?
Okay,
get off my plane.
That's where the snake's there, right? He's in the plane, the snake's there, and he's like, oh, get off my plane.
And he says, I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking...
Exactly. Yeah, he's always by snakes for some reason.
Those are different movies. Wasn't Harrison Ford snakes on a plane? Get off my plane. He wasn't yelling at snakes.
Zoe snakes, Dano.
When I woke up this morning, I thought I was walking into a David Samson local hour. I thought we'd have everyone here in their Marlins gear, excited about baseball, and then listen to David defend the Marlins ownership and management from the last 20 years. And instead, we got Dominique, we got Chris Cody cracking jokes. It's been a great Thursday morning, guys.
Well, we have a mutiny on our hands, Jessica, and it's a bit of a problem. And Mike Schur protested for a day. Dominique is saying he doesn't want Samson around. And I need help with the business because, as Dominique just told you, I'm no good at that part of this. I need somebody in here.
Wait, Samson's running business?
He just wants to get into the crevices. Here? He wants to be the executive producer.
Oh, what? Shit.
Did you give Samson equity?
He wants... Everyone here has equity.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, but different.
What do you mean? Did we give Samson equity?
I love that part where Samson comes in and immediately like slashes the workforce by 40%.
Like Dominique was about to.
Samson was born with equity.
On third base.
Can you explain to people, though, when they get mad? Because I do believe Skipper and Samson do a very smart hour of sports business, and I think Dominique would be just as smart. Because I remember very early meeting Dominique, he sat across.
Smarter.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. Sat across from Jerry Jones and realized very quickly, oh, this person's not smarter than I am. He's wealthier and he's had success and he's an oil man and everything else, but this is not a brilliant man. This is just a man with a whole lot of money. And I think that you could have a business conversation from a player perspective that Skipper and Samson don't consider.
So Jerry Jones is one of the most savvy, and I mean, he's very smart. He's a very savvy businessman. And I think the interpersonal stuff and the personality stuff and the marketing stuff, he saw ahead. Like, he sued the league a number of times in ways that ended up benefiting the entire league, not just him, because he sees the future in a way. So like, I don't mean to argue, like some people may argue, that anyone who's successful is just 100% lucky, because that would be outrageous. But there's a lot of luck and happenstance that gets people to certain positions. And I think
it's all luck.
Yeah.
Dominique, let me explain something to you.
Dan out here explaining callbacks. You want me to teach you how to do an audio program?
Dominique, so what I was saying yesterday, or 2 days ago, whenever it was, is a lot of famous people and rich people got lucky.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I think you're right. There's a lot of luck involved in it. I think it's like serendipity mixed with like hard work and talent. Like there's a formula. And I think part of the luck is like being born in America. And part of the luck is being a white man. Part of the luck is, which isn't luck at all. You're just born these ways. But part of the luck is you just happen to be the right place at the right time. But the point is, there are differences in different people. So whatever. All that aside, the point is, I think I assumed that going into the owners' meetings, I was a bit intimidated when I was a player before I went in, because I assumed that to get to the top, to be like a billionaire, to get to the top of business, that you had to be as exceptionally intelligent as I was athletic. It's like you might have gone through something like that. And I was like, oh, I can't f with the me of brains, the LeBron James of thinking.
Oh, basketball Illuminati.
So I went in there and then I was like struck by the fact that like, they're normal people who like worked hard. I'm not trying to knock them. They worked hard and they're like intelligent enough. Like they're above average intelligence. But I was expecting like Bill Gates, you know, where it's like they read an entire book a day.
but also, Dominic, there's a part of this which I believe with all genius, right? Like, you're not genius in general.
Yeah.
You're genius at something.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Yeah. That particular thing, you may excel at does not necessarily mean it translates over to everything, which is, I think, like, when I think about the way people think of Elon Musk, like there's a part of it where, like, they're applying, like, oh, because he was had a vision in investing in Tesla early or whatever, that means he'll know how to do Twitter right. And it's like, it's clearly obvious the guy has no idea what he's doing.
When you have kids, I think if you have multiple kids, you start to see this also, that, like, you're not a genius at everything. Like, all of my kids are, like, really exceptional at something, but
that you're not.
That I'm not. Yeah. But none of them are exceptional at all things. And, like, if you show up and hang out with me and my family, you'll walk away thinking, wow, that boy of yours is like, so charismatic. And you, like, assume, like, he's such a genius because, like, he's personal. You look at their report cards, you would feel, you'd be like, hey, that oldest one, she never gets anything lower than an A. She must be perfect. So it's just like, and then the youngest one, you're like, she's hilarious. It's just, you start to realize that, because I think we all think of everyone like, we're all starting at the same place. We're all, every man's created equal and woman's created equal, when it's not true. Like, we all have different advantages. And sometimes the other thing that's crazy is this world is built for a certain type of person. And I don't mean like the way a person looks, but like the way someone thinks, the way someone reacts. The world is built for a certain type of person. And if you are that type of person, then you fit in the world and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this person is so perfect. If you aren't that person, then you look at them, you're like, man, this motherfucker's a problem. When in actuality, like, no, the things that we prioritize is like, let's send kids to school. If you can sit still for 6 straight hours and recite all this stuff you learn, then you are an exceptional human being. If you can't, then you're worthless. When in actuality, like, there ain't nothing special about following rules. Like, it's not, doesn't make you special.
What stuff are you, is your kid better than you at? Isn't your kid like 7?
Yeah, so.
My 5-year-old, better at nothing than me.
Dude, it'll happen.
And it'll happen eventually.
Or
you haven't found a thing.
Right. Yet. So, like.
Give me something that.
So, the twins, they're exceptional at art. Like, drawing, like, they'll watch a movie and then they'll go and they'll just draw. From memory.
I can draw so much better than my
Gave her some saying, bad genes.
It's gonna happen at some point. You're gonna be floored because you're gonna be like, oh, in all my life, I could never be as good as you are right now at this one thing that you're doing. Maybe it's music. Maybe it's you know, math. I don't know.
Maybe your daughter isn't showing that she's super smart right now, but just give her time. She'll be the EP of the Levitard show in 20 years.
Do it better than her daddy ever did.
Maybe she's just really good at, like, interpersonal things. She knows that your fragile ego can't take that a 5-year-old is better than her at something. So she's purposely downplaying her abilities, something that a lot of women have to learn to do very young.
We're going to the Marlins game today, and this morning we were in an argument because she wants to wear a jersey. And I tried to tell her from a young age, humans don't, if you're not in the game, you're not wearing a jersey.
What?
I don't like it at any sport, any age.
What are you talking about?
They're uncomfortable. You should be a jersey person is what I'm trying to teach her.
Let me tell you, I think just being a parent, you want to, like, when I first had kids, I made it a point to, like, not push anything that I really like on my kids. And the whole time I'm watching, my wife is like pumping them with music, pumping them with everything. And I'm like, leave them alone and let them find what they like. Right. When in actuality, she was right. Because if you don't put it on them, somebody else is. Someone else in the world is going to. So I would say, Chris, if you feel strongly about this jersey thing, stand your ground.
Jessica tried on
Wrong
three
state
jerseys.
To say stand your ground.
Jessica
I'm sorry.
Tried
oh, Jessica,
on
no,
three jerseys this morning.
I did. I
oh,
put on
Jessica.
The Marlins. Bless the Marlins. Love them. Go Fins, whatever they say. They sent me four Marlins
the Marfins.
Jerseys.
Go
That's actually
Fins.
The exact slogan.
The Marfins.
All glorious.
They sent me,
put that on a t-shirt. I want to send that as the I want to sell that as the slogan for the Marlins. It should be that.
They sent me like four jerseys when I moved down here and I tried them on this morning.
I've never received a jersey.
Honestly, just like didn't fit my vibe today. Yeah. Like it just I'm with Chris Cody on this one.
What is the jersey that like Mike came in here a few weeks ago with a basketball
that
jersey with no undershirt? Like it's a dangerous game.
That was embarrassing.
A very strong opinion from Tony on
Dan. When was the last
time? Why
didn't
you say it to Mike's face?
I did. I said, Mike, please don't ever dress like that ever again. The same day, Taylor, one of our video guys, wore a jersey too, and he wore an undershirt. Normal thing to do. Not a jersey guy whatsoever. But Mike came in with a cutoff
armpit hair Tony, showing.
We get that side view.
I mean, you got to be toned. I feel like if you got to be tatted, also, these are important things. And the jersey has to be tight, which means your body has to be
right.
tight. Because I think you look stupid in a baggy jersey.
Even the hockey jersey's bad.
I got a top five jerseys you could wear. You ready?
Sure.
Top five jerseys you can wear. Where did that come from? Well, we were talking about something.
You guys were talking about jerseys.
I know, but I was talking to Jessica about her four jerseys.
Well, then the conversation moves, but okay. Tell us more about it.
You know what? We're teasing yours. We're not doing yours yet.
Okay.
You EP'd the shit out of that.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.